Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 1:32 p.m., and it is Friday, February 24th, 2017. Before we begin, I would like to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, and our colleague from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound and a transcript of our committee meetings. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today at this time, we have Representative Kopp, Representative Eastman, my vice chair, Representative Fansler, and myself, Representative Clayman, and we do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is a confirmation hearing. The speaker has referred the following governor's appointment to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. Three appointments to the Commission on Judicial Conduct have been referred to the House Judiciary Committee. Today we will review one of those appointments. On Monday, we will review the two remaining appointments, as those appointees had unforeseen conflicts and asked to reschedule to another day. Members have received the first appointee's application and resume. The appointee was invited to testify and has called in, so we will now open for invited testimony. And before I gavel in for invited testimony, I will note that Representative Christ Tompkins has joined us. Mr. McClintock, are you online?
Thank you, Chairman Clayman. Am I coming through okay?
We hear you loud and clear, and the Secretary says you're enunciating clearly. So if you would please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Donald McClintock. I'm an attorney in private practice in Anchorage, Alaska. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee at this time. I've applied for the position to the Judicial Conduct Commission, part of a pattern of a fairly long history of involvement with our court system. I consider the Alaska judiciary as one of the bright lights of our state in terms of delivering fair and impartial justice. I believe that I have skills and talents based upon prior work I had done on behalf of the Bar Association in terms of handling discipline matters. I'm familiar with the operation of the court system. It is something that I like to look to as a form of public service and look forward to an opportunity to serve the state of Alaska in this capacity if the confirmation process is positive. I have to admit I have not gone through a confirmation process before, so I'm not entirely sure how far you really would like me to go into any details. I guess my training as a lawyer often teaches me sometimes it's better to say less than more. So unless there's any particular areas that the committee believes I should go into, I think I will leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McClintock. And I would note that we do have a copy of your conflict of interest statement and other documents, as well as your resume or curriculum vitae, depending on how we like to describe those documents. And so I will then close invited testimony at this time, and I will open it up for questions any members of the community may have of Mr. McClintock. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go around the committee one at a time to see if anyone has questions for Mr. McClintock. And I would ask that if you have questions, that you complete all of your questions before I move on to the next committee member. I would also note that Representative Ledoux has joined us, and so I'll start with Representative Eastman. Do you have any questions for Mr. McClintock?
I do, but I think I would benefit from hearing some of the other questions. Can I pass?
You can pass, but we'll only get one turn when we come back.
Okay.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. McClintock, for being willing to serve. What is your understanding of the role of a member of the Judicial Conduct Commission?
Yeah, the commission itself was created by an amendment to our Constitution. I think it has a number of components to it. I think the most positive aspect of it is it is educational. It is a resource that staff provides, I think sometimes with oversight from the commission members themselves, to give guidance to judges when you have to make some of the close calls that we all have to make in our lives. The judicially prescribed or disciplinary role, of course, is also monitoring complaints to the commission. I see that role as serving two goals, one of which is protection of the public, which is always, of course, paramount, but also I think equally significant is protection of the integrity of the reputation of the court system so that it's and the type of justice administered is held in esteem. That is a process that does require judgment. There's a fine line between having every complaint go through a full investigation. So, you know, it is something that does require judgment calls. And I do have the training, if it goes to an actual disciplinary proceeding, to participate in that as an adjudicator and someone who would have to weigh the evidence and make recommendations if it goes on to a formal disciplinary matter. There is general also education for the public. I think Marla Greenstein, and I've seen her both with my in my role with the Board of Governors, but then also just in private practice where there's outreach to the community, educating the community on sort of judicial ethics and the role of judges in the community, too. So I guess that would be another aspect.
You follow up, Representative Kopp?
No, thank you.
Representative Christ-Tompkins, any questions? Representative Fansler, any questions for Mr. McClintock?
No questions. Rep. Kopp, I think, properly addressed the one I had, but I wanted to thank Mr. McClintock for his public service and his desire to help our state, and that's to be applauded and appreciated. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
No questions. Again, I will second those comments with respect to thanking Mr. McClintock for his public service and his willingness to serve.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McClintock, I'm curious to know what are some of the tools that the commission has at its discretion in the case of a valid complaint brought before the commission?
My exposure, of course, is most of these procedures are confidential, is what I've read in the materials that have been provided to me both when I applied and after the governor recommended me for appointment. Essentially, there is a investigation that is done by staff. There's an initial sort of screening process that is done that way. If the complaint is valid, and it's also jurisdictional because, of course, the commission only has jurisdiction over sitting judges as well as pro tem judges, but not magistrates and federal officers and that sort of thing. If it's jurisdictional, then it would go to a formal investigation. If there's proceeding toward disciplinary matter, typically a special prosecutor would be retained, whether on a pro bono basis or hired, and an opportunity provided to the judge to respond to the complaint, and it would then go through a formal process of both discovery and then subsequently an adjudicative hearing with recommendations been made as to whether discipline was appropriate or not. There is an opportunity for private sanctions. Any formal sanctions, of course, are simply recommendations to the Supreme Court. There is an opportunity for private sanctions for lesser matters, and you know, the range of discipline can be just minor slips or inadvertent failure to render the decision within the 6-month timeline, or more significantly, to turn in the paperwork showing that you did. And I believe many things like that can sometimes be handled on an informal, private basis. And those are basically my understanding of the routes that are available to the commission.
Follow-up, Representative Eastman.
Yes, and so if some of those informal or lesser sanctions were not appropriate, what are some of the greater sanctions that would be available to you?
There are again, if it's a formal disciplinary proceeding, then the commission itself only has the role of making findings and then recommendations to the Supreme Court, who actually is the entity that has the power to impose formal disciplinary action. And I have to, trying to think back of actual ranges of discipline that have been handed out in the past. I know there have been public reprimands. But actually, it fails me at this point to think of discipline that's gone further than that. But the commission itself doesn't impose the discipline. It does make the recommendation, and more significantly, makes the findings as to the nature of the breach of the standard of conduct.
Further follow-up.
And if you did have a complaint that was severe, would you be reluctant to recommend removal from the judiciary?
No. You know, that's one of the reasons I stated my willingness to serve is, I mean, I think there's really two goals that the commission serves besides the judicatory one, one of which is protection of the public. If you have a judge who cannot meet standards that's required for his or her conduct on the bench, then I certainly have no problem making that recommendation. And the other one is one I equally feel strong about, which is protection of the integrity of the court. It's a reputation that, like all our reputations, is hard won but easily lost. So you have to be able to prove to the to the public that the system works and it can police itself.
All right. I would like to give you a hypothetical. And I understand there's, you know, all sorts of challenges in dealing with a hypothetical, but that's why it's a hypothetical, so we can filter out a whole lot of other consideration, just focus on a couple of facts. So if you were appointed to the commission and a complaint was brought against a sitting member of the judiciary for marital infidelity, and you found after, whatever information was brought before you that in fact had occurred, how would you respond to that type of complaint, and what would be your thought process as a member of that commission?
You know, that's one that I would have to think my way through. I mean, the first thing you do, of course, is you have to refer to the canons of judicial conduct. I have reviewed those in the past. I think most of the conduct that is monitored or subject to discipline would be behavior that reflected on the judge's ability to discharge their duties on the bench, as well as to maintain their standing in the community. So I think there's some facts there. But frankly, on that question, I would certainly look to past precedent and the application of the canons. I really would be hesitant to shoot an opinion off my hips on that one as to whether that in and of itself has some other facts that may cause that to result in some form of discipline.
All right. Just one other
follow-up for
hypothetical. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have a complaint against a member of the judiciary for making an intentionally misleading statement in the public eye, how would you deal with a complaint like that where you have a judge who's accused, and you find out that, in fact, it did happen, where the judge, made a public comment that turned out to be a lie?
Mr. McClintock.
Yeah, that's, again, I would turn back to the canon. I guess it depends on the nature of the statement, the nature of its public import. Basically, one of the things that judges aren't subject to discipline on are opinions, but I think your question poses a statement that's made outside, not opinion, but in judicial opinions, decisions. But I think your statement hypothetical suggests this is a statement made out of the courtroom as a public person, but intentionally false. And, I think, again, I would have to turn to the canons and past precedent to see whether that invokes some of the concerns about protecting the integrity of the courts, and whether that's something that would be sanctionable. And, that is something I'm afraid I would have to educate myself on.
Further follow-up, Representative Eastman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So in that situation, I understand the value of consistency and precedence. Can you speak to us more on how you would approach that personally? Would that type of...
Representative Eastman, I don't think he's applying as a member of the Judicial Conduct Commission, and I don't think it's appropriate to ask him how we'd approach that personally. I think he's answered your question about how he would address that on this commission. So I would rule that question out of order.
Okay. Well, can I ask if that, if there is a particular reason why that complaint would be worthy of the commission's time? What about that type of complaint would be worthy?
I don't think that that's an appropriate question. He's answered the question about how he would respond to that type of complaint. It's often, and I think he's answered that he would follow the guidance of the canons, and
precedence.
I think he's answered that question. I don't think.
Okay.
I don't.
All right. No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Does that call for some follow-up since you've had your turn?
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, that's fine, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't going to follow up on that.
Okay.
I was going to give some real life examples. and
part of our effort was to just go around once and not get too caught up in hypotheticals, and that would be my preference.
Yeah, I wasn't going to speak to a hypothetical.
I mean, if there's a, if you've got one more hypothetical, I'll let you ask a question about a real life situation that may have resulted in a. But I'm trying to keep these going, so we each take one turn at our series of questions, and then we move on to the next stop.
Yeah, I'm fine with that, Mr. Chairman.
All right, and I don't have any questions, and so next we would have an opportunity for comments and discussion, and again, I will go around the room and give everyone an opportunity to make comments as they see fit. Would you like to go last again, Mr. Representative Eastman?
No comments. Thank you.
No comments. Representative Cobb.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I think that just if we just remember the most recent cases that the Judicial Conduct Commission has had to deal with, practically speaking, a judge signing off on a work contract indicating work completed and eligibility for pay when not being completed, or sending notes to a DA or a defense attorney suggesting a new line of questioning might be more advantageous. So those are the types of things that I think will come before Mr. McClintock. And looking at his experience and resume, there's no doubt in my mind he'd be well suited to address those situations.
Representative Christ Tompkins. Representative Fanster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to say once again, thank you, Mr. McClintock, for agreeing to put your name out there for this, and looking at your resume, hearing your answers to our lines of questioning. And kind of just seeing your background, I too agree with Mr. Kopp that it seems like you'll be a fine candidate for this position, and I thank you for your effort.
Representative Ledoux.
No comment really, except that I'm really intrigued by what Representative Kopp's real life examples were going to be.
I just gave them to you.
Those were
the last two cases they dealt with. Yeah.
Which probably is more in the nature of comment than questions, because the commission and the court have ruled on those things. I would imagine that any applicant would say that they made the right decision. I would just note that as seems to be often the case with many attorneys from the community, I've known Mr. McClintock for many years. I believe, if I'm reading these dates correctly, he may have actually been elected to the seat that I held on the Board of Governors of the Bar Association, or else we overlapped by about a month and a half, perhaps. But he's been long involved in the community. He has a very impressive record of public service in a diverse number of ways, which shows not only real integrity in the community, but a dedication to continuing that by putting his name in for this, and so I am pleased to forward his name to the body to consider it when we take up confirmation in the future, and I will be very pleased to vote in favor when that time comes, although that's not what we do now. And so if members have no further comments, Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee and recommends that the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration: Donald McClintock III, Commission on Judicial Conduct. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you, Representative Fansler. After we adjourn, please stay behind to sign the Confirmation Committee report. We will now adjourn for the day, and our next meeting will be Monday, February 28th. Now that the finance subcommittees have closed down, thank goodness, I remind committee members that we will resume our normal 1 o'clock start time. On Monday, we will resume confirmation hearings for two additional appointees to the Commission on Judicial Conduct, and after that, we will hear House Bill 69, Repeal Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission. We will stand adjourned today at 1:53 p.m.